Welcome to the Solid Verbal.
The Solid Verbal.
Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
I've heard so many players say, well, I want to be happy. You want to be happy for a day? Eat a steak.
It's that woo woo!
And now, Dan and Ty.
Welcome back to the Solid Verbal, boys and girls. My name is Ty Hildenbrand. Over there, it is the one and only Dan Rubenstein. And where are you now?
I'm in Houston, Texas. Ty, I am doing this show from Radio Row. I brought my sort of elaborate audio setup, and this is the first time we've recorded since the national championship, correct?
The first time, yeah.
Since our national championship recap, since we played our conversation with Adam Amin last week, we put that up. So I am, yeah, I'm sitting at a table, an uncomfortable table, and I'm amongst like 7,000 radio shows, but having a good time. And my signing day knowledge is above average, but not as great as years past, just because I've been working all day on Super Bowl stuff. But life is pretty good, Ty. How you doing?
I'm doing well. What's the fashion situation down there? Is it any better than Radio Row when we were down at Audio Avenue in Tampa?
Okay, so I don't know this person personally, but fashion-wise, I know you're fascinated by jean selection, right?
Yeah, big time.
So there's somebody that either is currently or has been considered to be like an NFL super agent.
Okay.
And you would assume when you're associated with that kind of term that you probably are looking slick, right?
No.
Jerry Maguire-esque.
Dude, they wear whatever they want.
But that specific kind of look, that image, you want to project that kind of slick sort of swaggy look, right? Because you want to impress college kids as you're recruiting them to become clients.
One would think, yeah.
Atrocious. like comic book store, like somebody who eating in a fast food dining room,
yeah,
kind of bad. It was really disappointing.
Okay.
But otherwise, the fashion's fine. Nothing out of what you wouldn't expect. You got a lot of sort of oversized polos, a lot of uncomfortable facial hair. Yeah.
All right. Well, welcome one and all to our National Signing Day special here. Again, you can find us on Twitter and Facebook and Instagram and Snapchat, all of the usuals out there on social media. Don't forget, if you like the show, perhaps you're just finding us, iTunes.com/solidverbal. We'll be here all offseason talking college football. Today, though, it's National Signing Day or National Letter of Intent Day, whatever you want to call it. It is when the stars of tomorrow sign with their new college teams. In some cases, if you're Alabama, they're signing like a semester or two in advance and perhaps taking on a gray shirt. But nonetheless, we are finding out where some of these stars of tomorrow are going to play. We're going to be joined here momentarily by our good friend Brandon Huffman, who's been on the program for years on end now, on signing day, talking about all things recruiting and, you know, where the hits, where the misses are, things like that. He is far more knowledgeable about this and perhaps everything than you and I, Dan.
Yes. I'm always excited to have Brandon on. Is there anything that stood out? How much did you pay attention to signing day? Anything that stood out to you in terms of trends, storylines, surprise teams, anything? Because this year, honestly, I've paid more attention to Oregon recruiting than usual because of the Willie Taggart and the transition situation with the new staff.
Sense. Yeah.
And I, all things considered, having 6 weeks to recruit, I think they did a pretty good job. So no complaints from me. They seem to address some issues. They seem to pull some kids that perhaps were unexpected. But what did you take away looking from a more 10,000, 30,000 foot view?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is actually where you and I can relate to the masses quite well, given the fact that you were tied up all day down there at Super Bowl Radio Row.
Yeah.
And I'm obviously still working the mysterious day job. I feel like that's how a lot of people keep tabs on signing day. Not everyone can be in the weeds all day looking at this thing. And, you know, again, just as you said, from a 30,000-foot view, I tend to focus in on the goofy stuff because that's what makes this bearable to me. I've said it time and time again on the show. I'm not like a huge recruiting buff, but I do enjoy some of the storylines. Cordarian Jones, a surprise commitment to Maryland, sent a weather balloon up into outer space.
DJ Durkin!
Yeah, DJ Durkin had a hell of a day for Maryland, so we'll talk about that in some detail with Brandon here momentarily. There was a kid for BYU who landed a helicopter inside the stadium to announce his commitment. We also had a guy, Levi Jones, a four-star linebacker who went to USC. He did the age-old T-shirt fake-out.
He did the
Russian doll layering thing where he faked to Florida and Florida State before eventually committing to USC.
Mm-hmm.
So that was fun. We had a guy commit to Washington State after flipping from Nebraska, after flipping from Oregon State, all within a short period of time.
I cannot stress enough, now that pretty much all of the faxes are sent in, I cannot discourage anybody listening to this show from tweeting at high school students, you know, class of 2018, 19, 17, whatever. Could not discourage it more. Please do not do that.
Don't do that. And then the big story for me, not to drone on too long here,
please,
but our two national champions of recruiting names were Kobe Buffalo Meat. Yes, that's a real name.
Kobe Buffalo Meat.
Two different kinds of meat, I'll add, but Kobe Buffalo Meat is actually a kid's name. He's 6'7", 285, and he committed to Illinois State. He's from the Heartland.
Go Redbirds.
In Lawrence, Kansas. And then my personal favorite was a gentleman by the name of Sincere Davis, who ended up at Ole Miss after flipping from Colorado State. Just a pure Southern gentleman, Sincere Davis.
I love it. I hope he is earnest and genuine. That's what I'm hoping for.
He could be a pathological liar, but Sincere Davis would lead you to believe that he was raised in a good, honest household.
Well, I mean, if he were a pathological liar, that's the type of person that would go by Sincere.
It's sort of like a Little John complex, right?
Right, exactly. Yeah, so I hope everybody had a good signing day that follows it with a little bit of decorum and maturity. And moving forward, curious to see what the new coaches do. And honestly, we aren't going to know nearly as much as Brandon Huffman, so we should probably just go in that direction.
All right, Dan, we are joined now on National Signing Day by the National Director of Recruiting for Scout.com. He's a gentleman. He's been on the program, gosh, I don't know how many times. But Brandon Huffman, how are you?
I'm doing good. Hi, Dan. Thanks for having me on. It's been a long time that we've been doing this, so I'm glad that you guys, and I'm thankful you guys asked me to come back on again.
A tradition unlike any other.
That's right. Before we get into it, we got to ask about the Avery Strong Foundation. How are things going?
They're going great. We actually just announced the golf tournament coming up in June. We've got some more events coming up that we're trying to lock in locally, and things are going really well on that front. Obviously, I wanted to be able, I'm glad you guys asked, because that gives me a chance to thank you two for your guys' support, for the listener support, just for the donations that you guys made. I mean, we are so grateful for just the outpouring of support for it, and can't thank you two guys enough, and it's going well. So we are excited to break more ground this year. Wish we didn't have to have this foundation, but I am glad that we are making an impact in Avery's name.
Absolutely. All right. So awkwardly transitioning on to a far less significant topic in college football recruiting. As I understand it, Mr. Huffman, you guys have just formally announced your recruiting national champion, and I'm assuming it's going to be Boise State. Who is it this year?
You know what? Boise State is actually our group of five champion.
Oh, but nice.
I'm really hoping that this program capitalizes on it, but Alabama has been named Scout's number one class for 2017.
Wow. How many years running now is this?
It's actually only the second year in a row that they've won the national title. I think USC finished ahead of them by ever so smallest of margins 2 years or in 2015. But they, again, just ran away with the pack. They were down to Georgia going into today, but like Alabama's want to do, they tortured Georgia and ended up with the number one class.
So what is the strength of their class? I feel like it's probably a redundant question. Obviously, they can pretty much pick off whoever they want, as you mentioned, and certainly as we've seen around the internet, but guys are like coming there just to gray shirt and wait it out until they'll have an opportunity to play. But where, as you look at Alabama, do you see the real strength of their 2017 class?
Well, it starts really with Najee Harris, who's the number one player in the country in the 2017 class. Interestingly enough, this is the first time Nick Saban has landed the number one overall player in the country on Scout's rankings in his 11 recruiting classes at Alabama. I've been watching Najee Harris since he was a freshman. I've seen a lot of great running backs come out of the West Coast. Najee Harris is probably the best back I've seen out West in the 14 recruiting classes that I've covered. They had to put up a little bit of a fight. Michigan was making a late run at him in going into the U.S. Army All-American Bowl, but he went from San Antonio right into Tuscaloosa. He's already enrolled, already on campus. So Bama has the number one overall class and the number one overall prospect. That right there is their strength. But They've got a couple of very good quarterbacks. They've got Tua Tagovailoa, a four-star quarterback out of St. Louis High School in Honolulu. They've got great offensive linemen. And, I mean, really, you just look across the board. Bama has guys. They even have highly regarded kickers in the class.
What's interesting to me about Alabama specifically is this is a year that, I mean, it seems like it's every year, but it's another crossroads year, just in terms of the coaches and the really talented recruiters that they lost. Billy Napier, Mario Cristobal, Kirby Smart making his way last year, but this is his first full class. What is it? Is it all Nick Saban? What is it about the allure of Alabama, maybe outside of winning? What is it about that recruiting machine that is so significant, especially, as you mentioned, Najee Harris? Their tentacles are moving west year by year.
Yeah, I think what's probably the most remarkable is the willingness of elite, top-tier, top-rated guys to go to Alabama with the understanding it may be 2 or 3 years before they even see the field. They don't mind that because they know even in just that 1 year window that they may be a starter or a year and a half, they still have a chance to be a first round draft pick. I mean, you look at a guy like Reuben Foster, he was the number 2 overall player in 2013 and really didn't become a full-time starter till last season. Rashawn Evans was the top 5 guy the following year and didn't really become a full-time guy till the second half of this season. And that was because of injury. They get guys that are willing to go and sit behind guys that were in the same position as them, top 3, top 4 guys. And they don't care. They know they're going to win. They know they're going to get developed. And they know that by being a starter at some point in their career, they're going to draw the attraction of NFL teams. So they've got kind of every box checked in what you need as a program: winning, putting guys in the NFL, and development as a player. And I think that that's why guys are still, despite the traffic jam at positions, they're still willing to go there.
When you look at the top 10, top 12 that a lot of the services, obviously Scout.com included, a lot of familiar faces. You have Alabama, you have Ohio State, Georgia making a run after some down classes the past couple years. USC obviously finished very, very strong today, especially in Southern California, but not limited to Southern California. Michigan finishes strong, Florida State, LSU. Oklahoma is a school, though. And this is, you know, we're talking about schools that are a little further east succeeding in Southern California, Northern California. What is it about Oklahoma's class this year that sort of vaulted them up higher than they've been recently?
Well, again, I mean, they spread a really wide net. I mean, they got 4-star kids from North Carolina coming in. They got guys from California. The top outside linebacker out west is coming. They continue to do well in the state of Texas, much to the chagrin of Tom Herman now, Charlie Strong before, where they're going into Texas and still getting, I mean, they do this every year. They get top players from Texas because it's not too far for most of those kids that are in the Dallas Metroplex area. They're not too far from their home, but then they also get guys in neighboring states. They're able to get down into Louisiana and Arkansas and bring guys in, but they have that national attraction where they can go down into the deep into the South. They can go out west, and they've been putting a number of guys in the NFL as well. And that's what attracts programs. It's what attracts players to programs like Oklahoma, where they don't have a huge pro recruiting backyard like a lot of the other schools in the top 10, but they're right. Such a national brand, and they have been, they're able to get guys to come there.
Brandon, you mentioned Texas, usually a recruiting powerhouse given all their built-in advantages, but if you look at the final 24/7 composite rankings, maybe it's not final at time of recording, but close enough, they're out of the top 25 at number 26. They signed exactly zero, I believe, of the top 10 recruits in the great state of Texas. Obviously, they made the coaching change to Tom Herman, and they're already bringing a lot back for 2017. But are you surprised at all that they didn't finish higher?
I am, and I think if there is an indictment, if you will, on the University of Texas, it happened this morning in the first hour of announcements when two kids from Westlake High School in Austin, Texas, Levi Jones and Steven Zabier, both picked LA schools. Zabier is going to UCLA. Levi Jones is going to USC. How often does Austin, Texas have two kids that are spurning the University of Texas to head west to play in Los Angeles? Those are the guys that Mac Brown used to be able to get. But then Charlie Strong kind of changed that focus, tried to recruit Florida more. Yes, he still recruited Texas, but he tried to get more into the Southeast. So Tom Herman, while he had a lot of these relationships established when he was at Houston, was finding that it's a tough go when you try to get into the game with 6 weeks left and you got coaches that have built relationships with these players over the course of the last 2 or 3 years at their schools and they're at those stable schools. So you've got Caleb Von Chasen going to LSU, Marvin Wilson commits to Florida State. I mean, two players in Bel Air, in the Fort Worth area, are leaving the state. Marvin Wilson and Walker Little, two top 10 guys. Little's going to Stanford. Wilson's going to Florida State. I mean, it takes a while to go down that list of prospects to find Texas getting an in-state kid. And that's the kind of stuff that Tom Herman absolutely has to change at Texas, because those top kids in Texas are now going 5-6 years before they can even remember the last time Texas was really a national factor.
Fair enough. And on that, let's sort of shift gears or continue to talk about really new coaches. And you mentioned the 6 weeks to recruit, and it is difficult to sort of form relationships with recruits and their families and coaches and sort of gain an ability to sell a program that is brand new to you. So, you know, obviously two programs in the Pac-12 North, one of which near and dear to my heart, the Oregon Ducks hiring Willie Taggart. And he assembled a really good squad of recruiters on his coaching staff. Cal has assembled a staff that looks a little bit stronger on the field, but they seem to be sort of raising their own profile. So starting in there with those two teams, how would you grade out what those two coaches did with, and even Cal had less time, with a very short amount of time?
Well, you know, in the case of Cal, they did have a short window. It's hard enough to put a class together in 6 to 8 weeks, but it's even harder when you try to put that class together in 2.5 to 3 weeks. I mean, essentially, they lost that first weekend after the dead period in mid-January when Justin Wilcox was hired. So right. Every other school in the conference was getting 3 weekends of official visits. Cal only got 2, and then he had to try to put a staff together. So that made it difficult. And what also didn't help them is the fact that Sonny Dykes, really, him and his staff didn't do a great job of recruiting California and certainly not the Bay Area. So Wilcox is coming in, and he was able to flip a couple guys, but he flipped a guy from Cal Poly. He flipped a guy from Hawaii.
Right.
They really have to make that a priority in 2018, recruiting the Bay Area, and just really trying to make those inroads back again, because there was such a refusal to try to recruit the Bay and to try to get into Texas. So Wilcox has his work cut out for him. Conversely, you look at what Oregon did in that hiring of Willie Taggart. It gave him enough time in the month of December to let him get on the road, get an official visit weekend in, but to let him get on the road and do in-home visits. And that was crucial in them really starting to get that momentum when he was able to get down into Ranch Cucamonga and have an in-home visit with Thomas Graham, because Thomas Graham started this really great cycle towards the end of these guys that weren't really looking at Oregon. I mean, remember, D'Amato Lenore decommitted just hours before Helfrich was fired.
Right.
Then it started to shift with Thomas Graham. He commits. They're able to flip Braxton Burmeister just days before he leaves for Arizona. They got the two kids at the Polynesian Bowl, Austin Faleo and Isaac Clay Matotua. Then they got Cyrus Savivi-Lucio. They got a couple kids out of Florida. But what Taggart did really well is instead of just focusing on those Florida kids he had a relationship with, he did a great job of getting some of these West Coast guys that Oregon had been recruiting, and I like the balance of their class across the board. But what's even the most remarkable aspect of it is they're going to end up with the number two class in the Pac-12. And considering that, and look what they were dead in the water when D'Amato Lenore flipped, and then to get him back in the boat today, they're going to end up with a very strong class.
I like hearing that. Even with a couple of minor disappointments, it seems like a big win. And another school with a new coach, it's Baylor Bears, and perhaps the most uphill battle of all because of off-field circumstances, even more so than Cal, just timing-wise. How would you grade out what Matt Rhule has been able to do in a short amount of time? I know he had a big commitment a couple days ago from a former Florida State commit, but how has Matt Rhule done filling this class with unusual and pretty terrible circumstances?
Yeah, you know, what's remarkable about them is when Matt Rhule was hired, they only had one commitment on board. Now, today, here they are, with the number three class in the Big 12, 28 commitments. So not only did they make a late charge, but they added 27 commitments since the hiring of Matt Rhule. So they're not just getting quality, but they're getting quantity too. And I think that that was probably the most remarkable aspect of it, in that they were able to get so many guys. It's one thing to be able to go get key guys, but to get key guys and to get a lot of guys when he didn't have a lot of ties, really no ties to the state of Texas, but he was smart. He hired some guys that were in the Texas high school football scene, guys that knew where to recruit, where to go get guys. And the majority of their class is big on Texas, but they got a couple kids from the Northeast that he was recruiting at Temple, or guys that at least he was aware about. But I think if you look at this class and you see how many kids from the state of Texas committed to Baylor and that are signing with Baylor, there's a lot of news out there about the Baylor football program that these guys probably see more than the average recruit. Just being in Texas, it didn't bother them. They committed, they signed, and I think Matt Rhule, especially because of the circumstances that he was recruiting with, has to be very pleased with the top 35-40 class.
All right, and we'll stay with new coaches just because that's where the most eyes seem to be in terms of change on the field and in the facilities. LSU and Ed Orgeron had probably the most ideal circumstance for a new coach in that he's there. He knows how things work in Baton Rouge. He knows the recruiting landscape. He had already been recruiting before losing the interim tag and becoming the head coach. How well of a job did he do building a class, closing the class, you know, sort of forging those relationships and building this program into a contender during the recruiting cycle?
Well, they got Caleb Von Chasen today. He was a five-star defensive end out of Texas. Mm-hmm. They got Todd Harris, who's a top 100 safety out of Plaquemine, Louisiana. So they kept the local kid. The big thing for me was Jacob Phillips was outstanding at San Antonio at the U.S. Army Bowl. Was a longtime commit to Oklahoma. They flipped him out of Nashville. They flipped him last week, so they got him. Tyler Taylor, another top 300 linebacker. Miles Brennan, they were able to hold on to. There was a lot of uncertainty what Brennan was going to do after the firing of Les Miles and after the adjustment of coaches. And then when it looked like they were going to get Lane Kiffin as their offensive coordinator, then there was the uncertainty of who they were going to hire as the OC. Brennan was given a little bit of an eye to leaving the state, but to leaving that class, ends up signing with LSU. Jacoby Stevens, another top five safety out of Tennessee. So I like what he did in Louisiana, but I also like what he did in the surrounding states. And that was what Orgeron's calling card was when he was at USC. It was when he was at Tennessee, is that he really has this ability to cover a wide swath of land. And Louisiana is going to always be good to LSU, but what's going to help them, I think, compete with Alabama for the SEC West is for him to still be able to go into some of the surrounding states and get top guys. They're going to finish with a number seven class in the country. And I think that, again, with still the uncertainty of the offense coordinator, with who they lost as a result of the firing of Les Miles, namely Dylan Moses, who's from Baton Rouge, LSU fans and Ed Orgeron especially happy, very happy with having a top 10 class, and they're the third, number three class overall in the SEC.
Brandon, the top three recruiting classes in the Big Ten at time of recording belong to Ohio State, Michigan, and Penn State, which obviously is not a huge surprise. The fourth best class belongs to Maryland. They had a guy, Cordarian Jones, send a weather balloon to space in order to commit via a video.
Yes.
This one, you know, I think people are going to listen to the show. They're going to go and examine the class. They're going to say, wow, Maryland sort of came out of nowhere here. How did DJ Durkin build this class? And what do you think it says about perhaps the direction that he's trying to take things?
Well, I think what was most remarkable about that class is that he went into Virginia and to a very good school in Virginia at Bishop Sullivan and was able to get three guys from that school. So you got Justin Fuente, who competes for an ACC championship in his first year there. You have Bronco Mendenhall, who's in his first year there, and Durkin as well in his first year. And Durkin's the one who goes into Virginia and gets key guys. But then he also got key players from Maryland. They, again, well, Durkin coming from the Jim Harbaugh tree, he knows that just because you sit in a certain region doesn't mean you can only recruit that region. He spread his wings. Yes, there's guys from DC on this team. This is guys from Maryland on this team. But you also have guys that he went down and got in Georgia. He went down into Florida. He got a couple of JUCOs. He got guys from Tennessee. And so he really kind of cast that net wide. The big get for them was Anthony McFarland, who was an in-state running back, number six running back overall from DeMatha Catholic. Had a lot of national attention, had a lot of schools after him, but he wanted to stay close to home. And I think that that's going to be key for Durkin moving forward, is keeping the top Maryland kids there. That was something that the previous coaches at Maryland struggled with. They had a hard time keeping those kids. And I think what I also like about what Durkin did is, instead of trying to recruit west of Maryland, he tried to stay in the Atlantic area. With that move to the Big Ten, that was always the worry, that they would try to go into regions where they didn't have ties just because they were in Big Ten country. He's focusing on the Atlantic as the core of where his class is coming from. And I think if you look at his class, it's evident that that effort to focus on that mid-Atlantic region paid off for them.
Yeah, and another Big Ten story is what Ohio State did very quietly, the number two class, but a monster class. If it weren't for Alabama, this would be like the talk of the town. When you look at what they've done now, how is Urban Meyer trying to reconstruct the farm in Columbus?
You know, what's interesting about that class is just how much of a focus that Ohio State had on the West Coast and how much of a focus they had in Texas. I mean, when Meyer was at Florida, he obviously was able to recruit the SEC areas, the South, really well. But this year, they kind of made more of an effort out west, and it hasn't been really something he focused on before this season at Ohio State. But they come out west, they get two players from Bishop Gorman, Tate Martell and Haskell Garrett. They get the number one offensive lineman in California. In fact, he was California's Mr. Football, Wyatt Davis. If any of you guys have ever seen the movie The Program, remember Alvin Mack, the character? It's Alvin Mack's son is the offensive guard headed out of St. John Bosco to Ohio State. Five-star player there. They went over to Maryland, got Chase Young, another player from DeMatha, which DJ Durkin's going to work on to keep the super, super top guys in close to home. But they really had a good year in Texas. And I thought that was interesting because you had Tom Herman down there in the state of Texas. He was at Houston, then he went over to Texas. And yet Urban Meyer had more success with the top-end guys in Texas over his former disciple. Got Jeffrey Okuda, who's a top 15 player. Got Baron Browning, who's a top outside linebacker in the country. And then got Kendall Sheffield, a JUCO, number one JUCO player in the 2017 class out of Blinn College. So he really kind of spread his wings even wider this year. And that's the danger with trying to recruit against Urban Meyer. He's got such a good reputation as a coach, as a developer. And I think moving forward, one of the big challenges for schools trying to recruit against Urban Meyer in Texas is now you've got Ezekiel Elliott playing for the Dallas Cowboys, repping Ohio State all the time. That's just another notch in his belt and another thing for him to sell to those Texas kids. Come up here, come from the Midlands, go to Ohio State, and you too could be starring on the biggest stage in the NFL.
Today's National Signing Day show is brought to you in part by our good friends over at Movement Watches. You know them, MVMTWatches.com. We've talked about them before. They started a lot like us, actually, from humble beginnings. Two broke college kids. They wanted stylish watches. They didn't have money to pay for them. They thought maybe they'd start their own. Now they sell entirely online, which means they can cut out the middleman, cut out the markups. They can give you the best possible price. Their watches, they start at just $95, which, as you know, is a fraction of anything you'll find in a department store. MVMT makes watches that have a classic design, quality construction, styled minimalism. They've sold over 500,000 watches in 160 countries. Dan and I both have watches from MVMTWatches.com. We both get compliments all the time. You will too. Right now, go to MVMTWatches.com/solid. You'll get 15% off today, plus free shipping and free returns. Grab one right now if you're looking for a Valentine's Day gift, but do it before it's too late. Head on out to MVMTWatches.com/solid and join the movement. Tonight's show also brought to you in part by our good friends over at Blue Apron. Listen, not all ingredients are created equal. That's why you want to order your next feast from Blue Apron. They give you fresh, high-quality ingredients, and it makes a real difference. You can taste it. Plus, now it's less than $10 per person per meal. They'll deliver it right to your front door, an easy-to-follow recipe with pre-portioned ingredients, everything you need, courtesy of 150 local farms, ranches, and fisheries in the good old U.S. of A. Some of the great meals this month include cashew chicken stir-fry with tango mandarins and jasmine rice, udon noodle soup with miso and soft-boiled eggs, roasted pork with apple, walnut, and farro salad, and of course, crispy barramundi with quinoa and roasted carrot salad. Get your first three meals for free with free shipping at blueapron.com/solid. Again, that's blueapron.com/solid. Blue Apron, a better way to cook. Let's jump down to the ACC quickly. Florida State came in first in terms of ACC recruiting. Miami came in second. Coming in third is the now defending national champion Clemson Tigers. Does this represent any kind of recruiting drop-off for them, or are there other extenuating circumstances that people should consider when they're looking at these rankings?
Well, I think in the case of Clemson, it's interesting because I was doing a little bit of homework earlier today. Clemson has not had a top five class, not even a top 10 class in the last 5 years, yet they played in two national championship games. They won a third BCS bowl, and this year they're not even in the top 25. Now, part of that's because they have a smaller class. They only have 14 commitments. In fact, in the top 50, they're the only school in the top 50 with less than 15 commits. And so if you are, well, with the exception of Stanford as well, who recruits differently more than anybody, but for Clemson to compete for national championships, and yet they still haven't had a top five, top 10 class, it's pretty remarkable. But people that think that there's a drop-off, you go to the 2018 rankings, which we're going to release a new set on Thursday. The number one player in the 2018 class in the country, Trevor Lawrence out of Georgia, is already locked in with Clemson. He's already committed there. So they lose Deshaun Watson, but they've got a nice steady stream of quarterbacks coming in. And I think that Dabo and his staff do a tremendous job of developing those guys and playing guys early. But this is just one of those years where they had a smaller class. So it may not be as sexy because there's not as many guys in it, but they definitely filled some key needs.
Let's stick with that theme, because you did mention Stanford, another school with a very small class. Obviously, the way that they recruit is different from most of the rest of the country's powers. But you look at their class, and it's, I think they have, of their 14 commitments, 9 or 10 guys that would be considered blue chips, which is still weird to say with Stanford. But they might have the best offensive line class and the best pure quarterback in this class, which is nothing to sort of skim over. How strong is this class, you know, just in terms of the quality, not necessarily the quantity?
I mean, it's the most Stanford thing ever to have the number one tight end and the top two offensive linemen in the country. And that's what they're really pushing as sexy, because for Stanford, that's really sexy. They love to get those big guys in the trenches. Colby Parkinson is the number one tight end in this class. And I've said this a couple of times. If you kind of take the key attributes of the best tight ends at Stanford in the last decade, the length of a guy like Levine Toilolo, the hands of a Zach Ertz, the strength of a Kobe Fleener, the speed of an Austin Hooper, and you put them all into this one bat and said, hey, let's design a tight end, Colby Parkinson is what they produce. Then you take in the top two offensive linemen in the country, Foster Sarrell and Walker Little at 1 and 2, plus Ben Davis Mills. And again, I hate to throw out player comparisons because so much goes into that. But if you're going to look at the closest thing that Stanford's had as a quarterback to Andrew Luck, Davis Mills is that guy. So Stanford has 3 of the top 6 players in the country. Every year it's the year David Shaw is supposed to be going to the NFL. And every year David Shaw stays because he's just recruiting at such a different level. He's getting the best players in the country. People that thought that drop-off was going to happen from Harbaugh clearly don't know that Stanford just continues to recruit better than just about anybody, given what they have to deal with from an academic standpoint. And so they got 5 top 100 players, and they only have 14 kids in this class. I think they end up with the, on terms of the average star ranking, they have the most quality class of anybody in the Pac-12.
UCLA, USC. USC obviously finishes in a crazy strong way, but where are they specifically strong in this year's class?
A defensive line. I mean, they got 2 of the premier defensive linemen in the country, 2 of the premier defensive tackles in the country. Marlon Tuiapulotu, who was from Oregon, actually spent the majority of his childhood in Los Angeles before moving to Oregon. But then he committed to Washington in April. A lot of people thought, hey, you know, how solid is that commitment to Washington? Then there was rumors he was going to move back to Los Angeles. He stayed strong in his entire recruitment to Washington. Then about 2 weeks ago, USC gets him for an official visit. He ends up flipping to USC and enrolling. Then today, so he's the number 5 defensive tackle in the country, number 2 in the West. Then today, they got a commitment from 5-star Jay Tufele out of Salt Lake City, and he's the number 3 defensive tackle in the country, but the number 1 in the West. So they get both those guys. They get the number 2 receiver in the country. They get the number 2 tight end out West. They get one of the top outside linebackers in the country and one of the top athletes in the country. So they went into today with 6 guys that they felt that they could get, all top 150 guys. They got all 6 of them, including 3 5-stars. So Clay Helton, I think the thing really turned around for them when they beat Washington in Seattle in November. The next day, they flipped Jack Sears, who took over for Sam Darnold at San Clemente, from Duke. And since then, they've had nothing but recruiting momentum. And so the way they closed on the field with 10 straight wins or 9 straight wins was followed up with them closing dramatically in recruiting. They have a top 5 class and the top class in the Pac-12.
You mentioned Washington, obviously coming off of a playoff appearance, maybe not the greatest appearance for the offense, but nonetheless, an incredible season for the Huskies. Were you a little bit surprised that they were not able to capitalize on that sort of on-field success as much as they were, or did this seem appropriate?
No, because they were actually sitting in. After they won the Pac-12 championship game, they had Marlon Tuiapulotu fully on board. They had Connor Weddington, a top 100 kid from their backyard who had been committed since February, on board. But then Weddington, the week after the Pac-12 championship game, was admitted into Stanford. He decommitted and then ultimately flipped to Stanford. They lose Tui Pulotu. They have the number two player in their country in the backyard, Foster Searle, although I never thought he was going to Washington. So they lose two of the top three players in state, plus their highest rated commit. They were able to add a few guys today that, you know, were nice complimentary pieces, but I think there's a lot of frustration with Washington, with the coaches that are just, they were this close to having a magical class, but then they lose two players to two of their biggest rivals in the Pac-12 at both Stanford and at USC. And I think that, you know, Chris Peterson has done a great job in the state of Washington, but now that's 2 years in a row, the top player in the state has left them. Last year they lost Jacob Eason. This year it's Foster Searle. So they, you know, could have had a class become much better than it was. It wasn't ever going to be a big class, but it was going to be a strong class. Losing Weddington and losing Tui Pulotu, though, is definitely leaving them stinging.
All right, so we've talked about a couple teams that are certainly top-heavy, and we'll stay in the Pac-12 before we go elsewhere. UCLA, a team you're exceedingly familiar with, very strong at the top with arguably the nation's best corner in Darnay Holmes, arguably the nation's best pass rusher in Jalen Phillips. How do you evaluate the job that they've done, and has there just been too much turnover and too much uncertainty around the coaching staff after last year for UCLA to sort of maintain the momentum that they've had on the recruiting trail?
This really was a tale of two classes for UCLA. There was their defensive side of the ball, which was very good. Like you mentioned, Darnay Holmes, Jalen Phillips, the top defensive end and cornerback in the country. But then on the offensive side of the ball, they didn't sign a receiver. They didn't sign a running back. They did add a four-star offensive lineman today, but he hasn't played since his junior year because he had some transfer issues. They sign a quarterback who's barely a top 75 guy, is more of a sleeper project. They didn't hire an offensive coordinator until January. They got rid of their offensive line coach 2 weeks ago. So there's too much turnover on the offensive side of the ball and some coaches that maybe just didn't put the effort in to recruit that the coaches that replaced them didn't right. have a lot of time to make up with. Now you flip over to the defensive side of the ball and they did well on the defensive line. They did well in the secondary, but UCLA's problem last year wasn't on defense. It was certainly on offense. And then they follow that up with just a very mediocre offensive class. So, you know, this is going to be a make or break year for Jim Mora at UCLA. They were able to salvage this class largely because Jalen Phillips was a son of two UCLA students, two UCLA grads, and Darnay Holmes, his father, and Demetrius Martin, the defensive back coach at UCLA, were longtime friends. But if you look at this class across the board, a lot of disappointment because of how bad their skill position signings were in this class, and they really need to make a difference in 2018 where there's better receivers, better running backs. But this is a pressure year for Jim Mora, both on and off the field.
So, of course, in the Orange Bowl, one of the better bowl games is postseason. Florida State edged out Michigan by 1 point, but now in the recruiting rankings, we've got Michigan actually edging out Florida State by one notch, 5 versus 6. Again, if you look at the 24/7 composite rankings, how did Michigan edge out Florida State despite some of the heavy artillery that the Noles are bringing in?
You know, Michigan did a really good job early on and then keeping a lot of those guys. They got some late guys late. They didn't get as many late this year. There wasn't a Rashawn Gary type number one player that they got, although they did make a case for Najee Harris. But adding Aubrey Solomon today was obviously huge for them. He was originally a Michigan commit. You remember he was the one that decommitted because his name was spelled wrong in a thank you note. But then he came back on board because, you know, he loves Michigan. They had Donovan Peoples-Jones, who's the number one receiver in the country. Cesar Ruiz, the number two center in the country. Drew Singleton, the number five outside linebacker who came from the same school that Rashawn Gary was at. They did a good job of building these classes in the last couple, in the first few months of the recruiting cycle. And then the last couple of weeks, closed on a couple of key guys. And I really think if Michigan can just get their head coach into the news a little bit more, it might increase their national brand. And they might be able to recruit a little bit better.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Well, back to Florida State for a second, because Michigan may be a bit overexposed at this point. Cam Akers is a name that repeatedly comes up if you try to read anything about the 2017 recruiting class. He's able to do things that you wouldn't think he's able to do. And you kind of hear that as a whole for the recruiting of the running back class this year, that it's just a really strong running back class. Where else is it strong? I've seen offensive tackle. What else do you see just as you look at this class as a whole? Where is it good? Where is it not as good?
Yeah, I mean, the offensive tackle class, the offensive line in general was really strong across the country. And I think when you look at the caliber of interior linemen, it used to be that schools just wanted offensive tackles, and then they would make those guys into offensive guards. But then you look at the last few years, and you're seeing a bigger emphasis on NFL teams drafting very big, punishing offensive or interior offensive linemen and grabbing guards in the first round. And that's really trickled down into the high school ranks and colleges who they're recruiting. Now they're going after pure guards, and they're plugging those guys in because of the strength that those guys have, the athleticism that a 6'3" guard may have as opposed to a 6'6" tackle who really can't handle the strength of an interior defensive lineman. You're seeing more guards that are getting, you know, pursued heavily as opposed to traditional tackles. So it's not just tackles that are really making this class really strong. It's the offensive guards and even some centers. Then you flip it over to the defensive line. I mean, this is an outstanding defensive tackle class, and especially out west. When you think defensive linemen, you typically think the Southeast, but the West has three of the top five defensive tackles in the country, and those are all big physical guys that can play inside, but they've also got the quickness to be an end or a three tech and be utilized in a myriad of different ways as defensive linemen. They're not just space fillers at nose. And I think if you look at the defensive end class too, it's also very strong. And so the trenches this year, probably more than any year that I can remember, have been the strength nationally. Next year, though, it's going to trend back to the skill positions, especially at receiver and especially at quarterback.
Yeah, and it's an interesting year because you didn't really have that consensus number one player. It kind of bobbled back and forth between a couple different guys depending where you looked. As you look out at the 2017 class, who are your favorite players to watch? Who do you think our listeners might be interested in watching now as we sort of see these guys out on the college football field?
You know, it's funny because you look at Alabama in these last couple of years. I mean, their running backs have put up great numbers. They won national championships. They've competed for Heisman trophies. But they've been guys that have been with maybe in some cases more system guys that they've really flourished because of the great offensive line that Alabama has had over the last 5 to 7 years. But now you throw in a guy like Najee Harris, who's a physical specimen, who is as talented a running back as I've ever seen. Now you put him at Alabama, and he's the best running back prospect as an absolute running back that Nick Saban's brought in, that Alabama has brought in. So he's going to be a name. You know, in fact, we went back and forth between him and Foster Searle as our top overall player. And what really triggered it was just the fact that he had such a unique blend of size and strength and speed. And he's the guy that he's going to go to Alabama. He's going to be talked about a lot. He's going to put up big numbers. But I think that, you know, he's just a different kind of back. As Vinny that I've seen, another player that I'm a big fan of, obviously I mentioned Wyatt Davis, the son of Alvin Mack. I mean, he is, for an offensive lineman to win the California Player of the Year, when you think of all the skill position guys, he's just this real physical punishing player that is an absolute blast to watch. But a guy that I think fans are going to really enjoy watching these next couple of years is Cam Akers. Yes, he's, you know, a highly regarded player. He's the number three player in the country. He played a lot of quarterbacks in high school. In fact, you know, he did a lot of Wildcat, but he threw for a bunch of yards too. And yet running back is what he's going to focus on at Florida State. And in the other year, he's probably the top back in the country. Same with Stephen Carr, who's just behind Najee Harris. But both those guys are top 10 players, and I think Cam Akers at Florida State, especially losing Dalvin Cook, Stephen Carr at USC, he'll probably be the number two behind Ronald Jones next year and then take over down the line. Those are two backs that I think are going to put up some very good numbers at Florida State and USC respectively. And so this top three of Harris and Akers and Stephen Carr is as good a 1-2-3 punch at running back as we've seen, including that vaunted 2014 running back class.
You know, before we get into any more big picture questions, do you have 4 to 8 thoughts about Notre Dame's class?
Nicely played.
Yeah. Oh, thank you. Are you there, Ty?
Speaking of coaching turnover, when you have a lot of coaching turnover and you lose, especially you have the guys that weren't asked to return, that were told to turn in their playbooks and told to turn their keys in. But then you lose guys like Mike Sanford, who is one of their better, younger, aggressive, energetic recruiters. You lose them to head coaching job. That's a bummer, but that was one of those that you kind of had to see coming. You had to expect coming, but it still doesn't help when you have coaches when you have that turnover as much as they did. So Notre Dame still is going to end up with a very good class. They've got a lot of good players coming in. I think that only Ohio State and the top 15 has as small of a class as Notre Dame does. So it's high on quality in that class if the numbers aren't that big. But they've got some guys in this class that I think have a chance to be very good players in college, and guys that I think are going to become kind of household names because they're going to be able to play early and they're going to be utilized early. Brock Wright, one of the best tight ends in the country. He's our number three guy out of Texas. CJ Holmes, a four-star athlete out of Connecticut. Aaron Banks, who was the top lineman in Northern California, he's already enrolled. Notre Dame does a good job of getting those guys in on campus early on. Ty, you're going to be excited because they also have a Swedish, foreign exchange student, Jordan Ginmarkeith, who happened to play with Rick Meyer's son down in San Diego. They took him from Cal recently. So there's going to be some storylines there, I would imagine, being that he's a Swedish exchange student.
Nice. Okay.
I like that. Is there an emerging region in the country? Obviously, teams that have the most talent near them tend to succeed more. Is there a specific region that you see growing and not necessarily becoming on the level of like Southern California or Florida or Georgia, Texas, whatever, but is there an area where you're seeing more and more and more that really seems to be making a jump in terms of pure talent availability?
Yeah, I mean, I think the Northeast is really seeing a growth there for, you know, especially New Jersey. There's becoming more players out of New Jersey that are signing with schools than, you know, even Pennsylvania. And I think that you're starting to see even some of the outer states in the Northeast starting to produce. But I got to say that the state that I think is becoming better and better, they were known initially just for their guys in the trenches, but you're starting to see more skill guys is the state of Utah. And there's a reason that schools are now making it a priority. Ohio State and Michigan did a satellite camp in Utah. Ohio State was pushing for guys heavily in the state of Utah. USC got the top player in the state, but instead of it just being offensive and defensive linemen, they're producing receivers. They had a U.S. Army All-American out of Provo who's going to Washington, a top five receiver out west. They have a running back, a four-star running back going to Stanford. They have players at linebacker. They have the number three safety out west who's staying home. His dad's on staff at BYU. He's playing there. So Utah is really starting to have much more than just offensive and defensive linemen. Now, right. The problem for that is with Utah, one of their big things about joining the Pac-12 was the hope that they would be able to keep those in-state kids home that wanted to go play in the Pac-12. Well, now you've got the Pac-12 trying to make a bigger emphasis in the state of Utah and trying to recruit those guys. And now you got national programs trying to recruit from there. And you're starting to see more Polynesian coaches being added to staffs. And they have ties into the state of Utah, which is why you're seeing more staffs around the country try to recruit that state.
And when you look at specific regions, obviously the guys that are able to take advantage and sort of seek out those players that are at one point diamonds in the rough and then they become household names, these are your superstar assistants. If you were building a dream staff right now, maybe not full of Ohio State or Clemson or Texas or whoever recruiters, but guys that you can see recruit really well wherever they go, who are some of those names that are just all-star recruiters right now?
I think Mario Cristobal is one, and I'm sure that you guys, especially Dan, you'll be excited to see what he can do at Oregon because he recruited the West Coast well. Jonah Williams, who started right tackle for Alabama this year, is from Sacramento. So he's been able to recruit not just in the South, but he's been able to recruit out West. Well, now he's at Oregon. He can recruit those kids in the West, but now he's got those Southern ties that, and putting guys into the NFL like he did at Alabama, he's going to be able to attract guys out to Oregon. So Cristobal would be one of the first guys that I would make a pitch for. Jay Harbaugh, I mean, he's tireless. He's the son of Jim, so he doesn't have a choice but to have energy and to be an aggressive recruiter. But he has been key in so many of these relationships that Michigan built because he's that younger guy. He, you know, has the knowledge of using social media to his advantage and really being, you know, he was only in college 5 years ago, so he, you know, kind of knows how to recruit. He knows how to kind of hit those guys where they're at and understand, you know, what a 16, 17, 18 year old, how he thinks and what triggers him. So you get a guy like Harbaugh who maybe is still learning a little bit on the job from a positional and from a X's and O's standpoint, but you can't knock his ability to recruit. You also can go down to USC. T. Martin has been one of the best recruiters in the country. And here's a guy who's a legend in Tennessee, who played in the SEC, coached in the SEC before he went to USC. Mm-hmm. He can recruit nationally, but then also has Gardena Serra, which has been so good to USC in the last few years, as his main school. So he's been kind of their national recruiter and a guy that I think has been really, in the last couple of years, putting himself out there as one of the maybe the next head coaching hires from the coordinator ranks. Maybe Tennessee, if they're looking for a replacement for Butch here in the next couple of years, looks less and brings T. Martin home. But he can recruit. Obviously, USC's offense put up some numbers this year. So those are three right there that I think if you start with those three, you can probably do a lot worse. And then you go get some young, energetic defensive guys on the defensive side of the ball. Kind of my next rising star, though, Tony Tuioti, who had been an analyst at Michigan. He's now at Fresno State. He was key in a lot of the groundwork that Michigan developed with the defensive linemen. He's at Fresno State now with Jeff Tedford, but I give him 2 years before he's at a Power 5 school.
All right. Again, his name is Brandon Huffman. You can find his fine work over at scout.com. Brandon, before we let you go, the URL for your Avery Strong Foundation.
AveryStrongDIPG.org is where you can find all of our latest news, notes, events that we've got coming up. You can follow us on Twitter at AveryStrongDIPG. Same with Facebook and Instagram. We'd love if people just keep spreading the word about DITG awareness and how we can continue to fight back and fight against it and honor our little girl in the process.
It's a noble cause. We would urge everyone out there to go and check it out, and please be generous with your donations. Brandon, thank you as always for being so generous with your time. I know it's a busy day for you, and hopefully we'll talk to you soon, but in the meantime, go get some rest.
I appreciate Dan Tide. Thank you guys for all the support for Avery, for our family, and thanks for having me on again, and thanks to all the listeners for all their support.
All right, Dan, again, that is Brandon Huffman. As I said at the top, he is far more knowledgeable about this than I feel I am at anything.
You're pretty good with space.
Yeah, right.
Podcasting, audio, I think you are extremely strong. But
he's really good, though. He knows this inside out, and I thought we covered a lot of good ground from the SEC. I'm looking at my notepad here. SEC, Big 12, Big 10. Notre Dame, ACC, Pac-12, we covered pretty hard. So,
yeah,
I think we did a pretty good job just surveying the landscape and giving people an idea for how their teams did, how the bigger teams in their conferences did. Obviously, we can't cover all of them, and I'm sure it's going to be a storyline for us now as we progress forward into the offseason. But an anticlimactic signing day, but certainly a significant and consequential one now as we progress.
Yeah, and I would argue nobody is as deft and precise and learned when it comes to Polynesian names, just rapidly casual with them. Like, there are some tough syllables in there, Ty, and Brandon is just a pro's pro with them. I love it.
Rapidly casual would be a great fast food restaurant.
Yeah, I'm sure it would be.
All right, well, fun show. I will let you get back to it. I can hear a crowd back there.
Oh, yeah. They're all surrounding me.
So, you do you. Do what you got to do down there in Houston. We will catch up next week. Figure something to talk about next week.
We got plenty.
In the meantime, again, it's itunes.com/solidverbal. Check out the website, solidverbal.com, and Facebook and Twitter and all the usuals. We will be back next week. We'll be back with you pretty much every week, all off season, talking about this or that in the college football world. Big thanks again to Brandon Huffman. We'd encourage you to check out the Avery Strong Foundation to defeat DIPG. It is well worth your time. Please read up on the story if you don't know it and contribute your hard-earned cash to a very, very true and noble cause. In the meantime,
absolutely,
for that guy way down there in the great state of Texas, Dan Rubenstein, for myself, Ty Hildenbrand, thank you again for joining us on National Signing Day. Catch you all in about a week or so. Stay solid.
Peace.